You're listening to a special series of Between Two Flags for UNA Canada's Green Corps program. Through regular podcasts, Green Corps will invite a wide range of experts to discuss complex environmental, economic, and social issues. Live tweet as you listen with hashtag Between Two Flags.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's session of Between Two Flags. My name is Melissa Mutunda. I am Project Officer with Canada Green Corps, and I'm here with my colleague.
My name is Benita, and I'm also a Green Corps Project Officer, and we are very excited to have both Mike and Imran on this podcast today.
Our speakers today are Mike Winterfield and Imran Jiva, and we're going to discuss active impact investments with them. Mike and Imran, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having us.
Wonderful. Before we begin to cover impact and social responsible investing, would you like to start by introducing yourself and telling us more about your work related to the education of investors?
Sure. I guess a brief introduction. So I'm Mike Winterfield, CEO and founder of Active Impact Investments, and we're in the process of raising our first fund that will invest exclusively in early stage social ventures. My background is actually an operational background versus a finance background, and that's quite intentional. We believe that in addition to investing money, that we're going to be able to provide a lot of help. So my career started with 20 years and primarily in technology, and 13 years in a variety of different senior operational roles, ranging from startup up to $300 million in revenue. And I'll pass it over to introduce Imran briefly as well.
Yeah, so my name is Imran Jiva. I'm the Director of Impact Finance at Active Impact. So I support with all things finance and impact reporting related, which we'll get into shortly. Prior to that, I spent 6 years at KPMG, where I split my time evenly in the technology audit practice, and then in the sustainability services group as well, where I advised companies ranging from $15 million in revenue to $2 billion on their impact investment strategies, how to manage and respond to climate change, and the more traditional services like verifying and advising on corporate social responsibility reports.
Thank you so much. Now, I think we would like to know what exactly is impact investing and how did you guys ended up getting into this field?
For me, it was about 5 years ago, I was introduced to the concept of conscious capitalism is what the person who first introduced me to it. And I really fell in love right from that moment. I had worked in companies that I think it was really a part of their values and their ethos to do good things and do no harm and to, you know, contribute back into the community. But having organizations like B Corp and looking at things like triple bottom line and now obviously we pay a lot of attention to the UN, the 17 SDGs. It was really interesting starting to see this combination between the ability to be a for-profit enterprise, but also have the primary objective of your organization to solve some sort of an important social or environmental issue. And so, as I mentioned before, I fell in love with that idea at the time, and wanted to go deeper and deeper into that. So it started with me working with a technology company that was willing to become a B Corp. That was called Traction on Demand, and so they were a real leader in the space, and then that moved into eventually into us opening up Active Impact Investments, where we want to work with a portfolio of companies that are committed to this space.
What about social responsible investing? How is it different from the Main Street investment or impact investing that we just talked about?
So SRI, social responsible investing, is essentially the way to a movement that's been underway for the past at least 10 years plus, where now investors are looking to their portfolios and starting to ask more questions about, you know, what are their dollars doing, and how are they earning their return and you know, adding up their RRSPs or PFSAs. As more investors start asking these questions, companies needed to respond, and fund managers, so you know, anyone who's designing mutual funds or exchange traded funds as well, they started to respond by either excluding industries that operate in areas that are generally frowned upon, like tobacco, military arms. Some funds will even exclude fossil fuels altogether. So that's what we would call a negative screen SRI fund. Or you'd have what I would consider slightly more progressive funds who would use positive screens to highlight companies that perform better with regards to their environmental footprint. So that could be in terms of less, you know, emissions per every $1,000 of revenue. So starting to track numbers like that and increasing the allocation into those companies for both a strategic opportunity perspective, as people believe that, you know, these companies are poised and positioned to actually perform better in the next 10, 20 years. And also from a risk perspective as well, that the companies are able to respond to their environmental, social, or governance threats appropriately, they will likely decrease your risk portfolio overall. So you got your negative and you got your positive screening types of funds. And the last one, which I actually think is quite interesting, is the shareholder advocacy or engagement type of fund. And so this is this type of fund, this SRI fund, you're not bound by, you don't have to avoid certain industries, you don't have to necessarily highlight for positive attributes, but you use your voice, so each shareholder gets a vote. So you use your vote to advocate on issues that matter. And the most recent example of this would be with the shareholders of ExxonMobil in the last, about 3 months ago now, if not maybe 3 to 6 months ago, they voted unanimously to force Exxon to better disclose their climate change risks in their portfolio. Now, if you can imagine a company like Exxon, which operates in oil and gas throughout the world, and they're behemoth, this advocacy is now forcing them to start to comment on how will their business model respond to a 2-degree scenario situation required by or agreed upon after COP21. And it really just highlights a different way to encourage change. So encourage change from within. So those are the three. They're focused on public markets, so markets you can, stocks that you can get in to readily, easily from your financial advisor. It's very accessible. The difference with that and impact investing is private. So you're investing in private companies who are not listed on these stock exchanges as well. And Mike, you got anything to add in here?
Well, yeah, just I guess I would say public and private. You know, I think Imran and I would and many others would still put that under the banner of impact investing. But to Imran's point, impact investing for a lot of people does tend to concentrate more on private, and it is such a broad term that I think it invites a bit of confusion, unfortunately. So, you know, sometimes people are talking about concessionary returns. Sometimes people are talking about risk-adjusted, i.e. above-market returns. People talk about public versus private. People talk about financing debt versus equity. So there is quite a bit that fits into this basket. But at a very high level, it's pretty much, you know, investing with some positive intentionality in mind. And where we particularly play is in the above-market and private and equity space. So that's where we're really focused.
It can get confusing because there's so many different terms being thrown around there that, you know, digging in and understanding the different, I guess what you call theses of each fund is important. So if you're an investor, potential investor, and you're talking to an advisor or fund manager, you want to understand, you know, what is impact to you and how are you actually achieving it? Because that will then equip you with more information to understand, am I investing in a publicly listed market or is it a private investment that is debt or equity? So, it can be quite confusing, but hopefully this starts to clear up in the next 5-10 years.
Okay, thank you so much for your insight onto that, especially that distinguishing between that. Speaking of like the broad terms that you did bring up, you know, many young people feel that investing is essentially for an older and wealthier clientele, and also even for a clientele that actually know what they can invest in and know what it takes to invest in it. And in your opinion, is this really the narrative? And maybe could you provide some words of encouragement to those who may actually want to invest like in a socially responsible manner?
Yeah, I really hope it's, I hope it's not the narrative. I think it's really important for people of all ages to get involved in impact investing. I know it's difficult for people that are earlier in their careers. They don't have as much disposable income, as much money to sort of set aside for the future. But it's pretty important that people do that. And as soon as you start investing, obviously every dollar that you invest, it supports a particular cause, whether a good one or a bad one. And so you have to put thought into that in the same way that you put thought into your purchasing decisions. So for me, I guess, I was lucky at a young age. I was sort of encouraged to, save for the future and save for a rainy day. And I would really love to encourage young listeners to do the same thing, to set money aside, because, in addition to being able to be influential with those dollars, if you set money aside and you're able to create some financial independence for yourself, that creates choice. And that choice creates choice for you later in terms of where you want to work. So you could work with companies that are purpose-driven. It creates choice for you in terms of maybe you want to start your own company, your own social enterprise. And it creates more sort of economic leverage for you to be able to have more of an impact in the economy. And look, every single dollar counts. They add up. With a big population and a lot of people even making a very small financial commitment, it really does add up. And look, at the macro level, I guess it also just contributes to a stronger economy with less debt and less government dependence and so on. So yeah, if there's anything we can do to encourage younger folks to get involved early, you've got to start at some point, and we'd love to see people start as soon as possible.
Absolutely. Yeah, and thank you for the suggestions and words of encouragement for those who are looking into that. Moving on, according to a recent PricewaterhouseCoopers report, more than 60% of companies now actually include the Sustainable Development Goals in their annual sustainability reports. But despite this, less than 30% of those have set specific Sustainable Development Goal targets, and only 13% approximately have actually identified the tools and indicators that they need to assess their impact against the Sustainable Development Goals. To what extent do you see those goals as being becoming a metric to measure that social responsibility that an organization needs to report on?
So I think the adoption, first of all, the SDGs are great. It provides all relevant stakeholders a clear picture of what are the issues we need to really focus on. So we appreciate having that as a guide to look for companies that are addressing these larger issues. With regards to adoption, the first part is the adoption of SDGs and using the indicator targets. I think it just takes time. Sustainability reporting in general has really only been 20 years, just around there.
Yep.
And if you compare that to something like accounting, which has been around for 500 years, that's obviously not a lot of time. So I think it'll take some more time for companies to start to adopt. They're really looking to the SDGs and this is what we love about it, is that the SDGs allow companies or investors to understand how their investments or how the company itself fits into larger systemic change. And I think that's the first step where we're seeing most companies are at. And that's from the larger, the larger corporation perspective, but also the smaller private company perspective as well. So that's the first thing we're seeing, is that everyone's kind of jumping in and saying, okay, now I fit into climate action. That's what our business model's mission is, to address climate action. So I think that's step one. Got anything to add?
Yeah, I would agree with what Imran says, that as much as possible, if we can align to common language, common measurement, that has a real positive impact. But the other thing that we want to make sure doesn't get lost is, for one, we just on a very basic level, we look for authenticity of founders and leaders. So are they really doing this for the right reasons? So regardless of what you're measuring, regardless of what you're saying, is there authenticity there? Mm-hmm. And then the second thing is, it's all well and good that we have these wonderful measures and we have this whole language, but sometimes it can feel like, a real, it's insider language, and it's just not very approachable to employees and to customers and the people who really need to understand that impact. And so we also, in addition to having universal measures, we really try to encourage people to use everyday language versus jargon to be able to communicate their purpose and their story and their mission.
And I think that's very important because you got to use your report, like if you're a larger company or if you're a small company reporting on impact measures, you're using it to engage your employees, you're using it to articulate your contribution to society as well. So if it's that falls on deaf ears, then all that effort, you know, will feel for none. And I've looked at a lot of CSR reports in the past, and they can be, you know, 15 pages long. And if only 15 to 20, you know, reporting nerds are reading that, then the purpose starts to get lost a bit more. But with going back to the specific targets and measures, I think also one challenge is that each company, when you look at what impact is or what sustainability means to each individual company, while there are industry suggestions on what measures matter, a lot of it is still subjected to that company itself, to their circumstance, to their region, to their workforce, to their suppliers. So that can be one barrier to adopting the specific targets. But from what we see is that the SDGs are kind of like that North Pole that everyone can use and refer to as a common point. Mm-hmm. And now we see that people in the not-for-profit, larger corporate or smaller private sectors as well, or civil society, are at least on the same page with what matters. Mm-hmm. And now you can move together to move the needle on the 17 different goals. And at least, you know, we can get to 2030 together.
Yeah, it is quite an interesting report. And like just the percentages that were reported were kind of disheartening, I would say. It's important. And we need to start really amping up on getting those organizations to really look into how they report their the social responsibility aspect.
And that's like, you know, if the audience here, we're looking at a lot of youth who are all so savvy, that's an opportunity to engage with your companies online, you know, using their products and services, asking how do you contribute to the SDGs, ask this to them on social media, see like that, you know, get to start engaging with them in alternative ways to show them that it matters. If they get these feedback points from their consumers, then they will know that they need to respond to it better. And I think that's something easy we can all do from our, you know, from our couch or on the bus or wherever, is just engage that way and let them know that you care about SDGs or sustainability in general.
I really appreciate your response earlier on how young people perceive investment and responsible ways that they could get involved into it. What would you tell to our listeners who might want to pursue a career in social responsible investing?
I think the advice would be is that this perception that there's increased risk is getting very quickly proven to be false. In fact, we believe that there's less risk in this space. So if you're looking at it from an investment standpoint, and you're careful about it and you get educated, there are certainly lots of opportunities out there to invest for at market returns or above market returns and do ethical investing. And on the work side, there are just a huge emerging field of companies, startups, large organizations that are taking this seriously, that there's a lot of choice in terms of where you put your talent and skills and time as well. So, you know, at a high level, our advice would be don't wait, do it. There's no sacrifice. This is your opportunity to vote with your dollars, with your talents. If it's on the talent side, you have an opportunity to really stimulate change with the laggards of industry, because if all of the youth and all of the talent is flocking towards companies that have higher purpose, then the companies that don't are really going to be left clamoring for talent, and they're going to have to really rethink their business model. Just bringing this full circle, this is really why we exist. So Active Impact Investments really was founded on the principle of trying to encourage the flow of more money and more talent towards socially conscious businesses. And we believe if that happens, that this space can really flourish.
Yeah, I could add a little bit as well. I navigated myself into career in impact investing, and I'm very happy and fortunate to have been given this opportunity. I think what it did take is a little bit of risk taking and kind of, you can't just go down the traditional path. You have to find your own opportunities. And I think my career to this point was about, obviously networking is very important and really standing behind your values and staying firm to what you believe in. And if it's sustainability, climate change, it could be, international development, poverty, you name it, whatever that area is that matters, I would say really get behind it, understand the issue so that you can articulate it to potential employers, and it really, sets you apart from from everyone else, because most people in general care about these things but don't have that deeper knowledge. So when you have those one-on-one coffees and you can articulate the issues, the food system issues and why or how it's improving compared to the 90s and early 2000s, then that will start to set you apart. And I think like what Mike said is I want to definitely reiterate that is just start now. You can either find a company that's already values aligned and you can work in a more traditional role, but supporting a company that, that has that triple bottom vision and purpose, or you can work for a more traditional company and be that change agent from within and carve out a new position for yourself, which previously never existed, and encourage them to start to report on their impact and start to manage that, and encourage them to identify the SDGs and see how they fit in, and encourage them to become B Corp and certify that way, right? So I think that's a whole other lens that us young people really need to take and say, if that ideal job's not there right now, how can you create it? Because all the jobs that are popping up in these industries are new. Like, they're all new positions. My title, Mike and I described what my job would be, and we landed on impact and finance. And that, that job title you won't see every day from all different funds. So I think that's, stay passionate and just kind of keep pushing this narrative, and I think that will be the key to success. As Mike's got a ton of experience recruiting, and when you meet people who are that driven, and you can see their purpose and feel their purpose, that's attractive as an employer, and I think that will really come across and set you apart. And you'll just find yourself, if you have your North Pole pushing you in this direction, then you'll get there.
All right, wonderful advice, and hopefully you might inspire a few of our listeners who might be interested in impact investment and maybe kind of forging a career in that field. I definitely agree by what you said. Definitely stick to your values and, start now. Otherwise, where are we going to end up if we don't? So thank you so much, Mike and Imran, for joining us on this podcast. Thank you for your insight into a very interesting topic that's quite hot in sustainable development these days. Just for our listeners, thank you for listening, and please remember, just keep greening.